Blog Talk Radio. who's a good guy. His name is Byron Bam Bam Jones. Hell of a nice guy. He's a good family man. And what I remember most about him was just the great encouragement, you know, that he gave me when I was a young guy just starting out. And, you know, losing him like that was, you know, very sad on a personal level. And then, of course, you know, with the death this week of two legends, Goody Petronelli and Angelo Dundee, so may all three of them, you know, rest in peace and God bless their souls.
Yeah, and we did an interview with Goody back in
July 2009,
and I actually submitted some of the snippets to ropeadoperadio.com. It's the lead story on there right now. So check that out when you get a chance. But I kind of mixed a little bit of my own experience in with the interview. And, you know, my best memory of Goody was when I first went into his gym in Brockton, and I got introduced to him, went into his office, and immediately he gets me a signed picture of Marvin Hagler and a poster. He had tons of them, and just, you know, kept saying he was looking for that next Marvin Hagler. Never did find him, I guess, but he talked a lot to us about how the sport's kind of declined in recent years, and kids have a lot of, you know, distractions, and he was right on the money, you know, but...
absolutely. you know, it was a great, you know, chance when we spoke with him. The things that, you know, his memory and his knowledge of the sport, you know, was, you know, just unlimited. And he always said that, you know, he kind of reminded me of my Uncle Eddie, who basically would say Marciano would beat King Kong, because, you know, he always said that, you know, Rocky, he just couldn't see a guy that would beat him. What was cool about John Scully's email was, you know, he said how he was at the venue, you know, and he bumped into Goody, and he knew Angelo was there, and he got them together. And he said, you know, they were just talking like they were old buddies. And what was the cool part of that was, because, you know, it was the masterminds behind Hagler and Leonard, you know, the guys that worked in the opposite corners. And he goes, who would have thought when I took that photo a year and a half ago, they would both be gone within like 3 days of each other.
Yeah. Crazy.
And I don't think, you know, when it was when I saw the report last night, there was like something like Angelo Dundee passed away. I'm like, no, they must be confused. They must be thinking Goody Petronelli. I'm like, because those in my mind, I'm like, no, it's got to be wrong. What another part of it was a shame about it was a couple years ago when I was headed down to spring training. I missed Angelo at the Phillies ballpark in Clearwater by 2 days. I was there on a Sunday, and my one friend that I grew up with that works at the park down there, he's like, dude, he goes, if you were here on Friday, he goes, Angelo Dundee was here sitting at the tiki bar. I was, no shit, man, you know?
What can you do? But, yeah, two great guys. The sport will definitely miss them. They created a lot of icons in the sport. And, you know, their legacy will still live on, and the people that they taught how to train, number one, and number two, the fighters that they were still working with in the end. And Goody was working with a couple. Kevin McBride was his real last, you know, project story. It was kind of an interesting relationship that those two had. And back when I was training up at his gym one day, Goody's gym, and Kevin McBride was in the ring sparring.
Last man to beat Tyson.
Yeah, I was hitting the heavy bag, and Kevin's young son comes over and tries to get my attention, thinking he's his I was his father. So that was kind of a compliment to be mistaken for Kevin McBride by his own son.
Six, like 280 pounds. Oh, wow.
Big guy. Tyson bit him on the nipple in that fight.
Yes, he did.
Beat him and cut open his head, I guess. But it was kind of interesting. I played the Tyson clip at the beginning, the way that Tyson characterized Fedor Emelianenko, saying, you know, I hate to see a guy stay in too long and get hurt like that, which is exactly what Kevin McBride did to him for staying in too long. And you never forget that picture of him just kind of slumped on the canvas against the ropes, just giving up, out of breath, just done. And I think he never forgot it either, so he just wisely decided never to make a comeback. But he loves MMA. We got a big UFC card this weekend. We'll probably talk about it a little bit later. Of course, it's Super Bowl weekend, so... yeah, Patriots.
You know, how much you pay me to root for the Giants? Because every team I've rooted for this playoff, I think, we're except Wild Card Weekend, have lost. Every freaking team.
Well,
the only one that came through for me was Denver versus Pittsburgh, and I think I've lost every other one since.
Yeah. Well, I picked, of course, the Green Bay Packers to win. And, of course, what happened to them? They lost to the Giants. So.
Yeah.
But Giants, Patriots, New York, New England, always a good rivalry. And if you're not watching that, I don't know what you're watching.
I'm watching the commercials and the block pools.
Yeah. But Saturday night, we have UFC 143, I believe it is up to now. We'll check on that later. But basically, the big news this week is Floyd Mayweather signing to fight Miguel Cotto. What do you think about that?
It's interesting to see what Cotto has left. My trainer, a couple years ago, we went to the fights together. I think it was 2007 or 2008. I honestly don't remember what year it was. This was before Cotto had the loss to Margarito, which... even though if it was tainted or not, it still affected him physically, let's be completely honest. And at the time, he was like saying, Mayweather don't want to fight Cotto. He goes, Cotto has the physical size, strength to beat Mayweather. Now, here's the thing is, Cotto has been boxing more. And that is effective when you fight a guy like Antonio Margarito, who basically feet look like they have some cement shoes on, who's a slow-footed guy. You can box more against him. I don't think Cotto will be able to box against Mayweather. He tried a little bit against Pacquiao, and he got carved to shreds. So Cotto's only real chance of winning in this fight is he is going to have to get in Mayweather's face. He's going to have to put his head on his chest and just thump away at the body and the arms and the shoulders, the kidneys, anything, as hard as he can in effort to break Mayweather down. If he wants to utilize his jab, he's got to jab to the chest. He cannot headhunt. And basically what he's going to have to do is, I mean, and I don't know if his skin or his chin are durable enough for this anymore, but he is going to have to take two or three punches to land one, and he's going to have to make his one count. Even if it's a hard thumping jab to the torso, That's the only shot he's got. Well, let's be perfectly honest here.
Yeah. But it's definitely kind of an interesting fight, thinking, you know, Floyd was going to fight this Alvarez, and then all of a sudden they get switched up, and he's actually moving up in weight to fight Cotto. Now they're saying that Manny Pacquiao's short list includes... Timothy Bradley, and who's the other guy? Lamont Peterson, even, has been mentioned. But Lamont Peterson is now in the midst of a big appeal with, I think it's the WBA, who ordered a championship match. But basically, it's probably not going to happen. It's probably going to be Bradley and Pacquiao. So both guys are facing pretty tough opponents. So I don't think Floyd will have any trouble with Cotto. I think he's wise to his style and just has improved so much in his last few fights. He doesn't have to worry about Bradley could give Pacquiao some problems. You know, we'll see though. I don't know what to think about those two matchups if they happen, but. Obviously, that means the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight is not happening in May. It could happen in November, maybe, because the and they'll be the next window, I think. But, you know, now we got to wait until at least June 9th, which is going to be Pacquiao's fight date, I think, according to some of the things I've read about Bob Arum's comments, to find out if they're going to sit down and discuss November at all and get it together. But we'll see. I guess we'll have to wait until then, but we'll definitely see then, I think. Anyway, we have to get Matt Peterson on the phone. As soon as I can get his number here. And Matt is the guy that hooked us up with an interview with Mike Brown from Norwich and from the WEC and UFC fame now. He's going to be up in Maine at Matt Peterson's show here. So we're going to get him on the phone.
This is Rich.
This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
Hey, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. We're also on the phone with Tony the Tornado Pinnacal. He's our boxing
guy. What's going on? What's happening, Tony?
Not too much. How you doing?
Very good, man. Very good. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Not a problem at all. Tell us a little bit about your background, how you get into MMA. I read a little bit about you here, about your effort to get MMA legalized in Maine. Tell us a little bit about how you got interested in it in the first place.
Right on, right on. Well, it was I was 16 years old when kind of this love affair / obsession started for me. And a few buddies and I got together. We pitched in some pennies and ordered the UFC. I think it might have been like UFC 4 or 5. I got to check, but it was when Big Daddy Goodrich fought Paul Herrera, and he just elbowed him into oblivion. Like he broke Herrera's jaw. It was a really, really just ridiculously brutal fight. But I remember seeing that, and I'll never forget that moment. My jaw just hit the floor. It was almost an out-of-body experience. I could not believe what I was watching. I'd heard about this. You know, that's why we were buying the pay-per-view. And then from there, I've just been pretty much obsessed with the sport ever since. It became a lifestyle for me, really. My brother, who was a really good wrestler in high school and wrestled a little bit in college, he went to the University of Southern Maine, and one of his assistant coaches on the wrestling team was Mike Brown. And he introduced me to Brown. This was almost 11 years ago. Longer than that, I guess about 13 years ago. And he said, hey, I want you to meet this guy. He's my coach. I think we're going to see him in the UFC someday. At that time, you know, everybody that was fighting said they were going to be in the UFC. And I was like, kind of, yeah, whatever. Well, I met Brown, and I was just struck by what an amazing guy he was. And, of course, he went on to win a world championship, become the number one featherweight fighter in the world. And I became very, very close friends with him over a 10-year friendship there together. And long story short, I know I'm kind of taking it through all the nitty-gritty here, but that really, for me, was what forged my interest in the sport, were the guys that I was meeting that competed, the athletes. And when I had the opportunity to run and fortunately win a seat in the Maine State Legislature, I knew going in where we didn't have the sport legal here in Maine that it was going to be a top priority for me to make sure that we had the opportunity to feature these amazing homegrown athletes right there in Maine. And that was kind of the genesis. So I had the opportunity to sponsor the legislation, pass the bill, and have attended some events here on Maine soil. Big fan, was very proud to see that happen. And then was contacted by a gentleman from Massachusetts who wanted to bring some business to Maine, wanted to hold a show up here. Reached out to me about 5 months ago and asked if I would do his matchmaking for a card. And that kind of brings us to where we're at now with a show on February 11th back in Lewiston, Maine, hopefully making it the fight capital of Maine.
Cool. And what is the MMA scene like up there in Maine? I mean, I know that's probably the top guy who comes to mind who's even from Maine would be the Irish hand grenade there.
Definitely.
What other guys that people might not know come from Maine? I know Tim Sylvie is another one that I think of, but what other guys are there up there, and how about the new guys that are going to make some waves?
Absolutely, yep. Well, like you said, you pointed out a couple of the big ones. I mean, I haven't done the math, but I'm pretty positive that Maine is the only New England state that's produced two world champions in Tim Sylvia, who was, of course, the UFC heavyweight champion there for a while, and Mike Brown. These are both homegrown Mainers that unfortunately are out of state now, but they weren't able to hone their craft here on Maine soil. So you got Tim Sylvia, you got Mike Brown, you got, of course, Marcus Davis, who's still here. We're very proud to have him here in Bangor. Another guy that was a real pioneer of the sport back in the no-holds-barred days, back when it was bare-knuckle and headbutts and anything goes, is Jay Jack, who runs the academy in Southern Maine. He's got a huge school there. He's been doing it for a long time. I think he's probably had his school for almost 10 years now, and has brought up and trained some really tough fighters. One of the guys is. They were featuring on this card at Paul Gorman, who's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, former high school wrestler, super tough guy, and he's going to be facing off against the WEC and Bellator veteran Anthony Leone out of Team Bomb Squad in New York. So that's a co-main event. We've got a dynamite main event, but that co-main event could be a headliner at any other card, too. It's two very tough guys that are going to be going at it, so we're excited about that one as well. So we got some great stuff going on. We got a new school up in that Brewer, Maine. It's not new, but people are starting to really hear about it now. Young's MMA. I have a guy named Chris Young, who trained with Marcus Davis for a period. He's bringing up guys like Brian Sanders, who's 2-0 as a pro. Ray Wood, who's a featherweight amateur. He's a 145-pound guy. He's 3-0, making some big waves. So we've got a lot of schools popping up, a lot of guys doing some really interesting things, and hopefully we can have more shows going down to just showcase this talent on a more constant basis.
Right. And what are the crowds like? Are there a lot of people in Maine, or is it pretty hard to get butts in the seats up there?
No, it's been really good. I mean, we had three shows up here last year. The first show was at the Stevens Memorial Armory in Portland, Maine, and they did really well. I believe it was close to a sold-out show there. And then we had a couple of shows at the Portland Exposition Building, and those crowds, I think the first crowd was up around, they did 1,600 or 1,700 people, and then the second one was even closer to 2,000 or something like that. So when you look at regional MMA, I think Maine is right up there. I mean, it's a hike for some people to come up from Massachusetts or whatever, but the people are definitely, Mainers are showing up for these shows, and it's exciting to see that. Kind of brings you back to the fight night days in boxing in Portland when they would turn out a bunch of people. A guy was just telling me, he said it used to be unbelievable. Every Thursday night they would have fights, and there would be 1,000, 1,100 people in the seats for those shows as he recollects it. So it's a cool thing, and I think Maine definitely appreciates its combat sports.
Yeah, definitely. I actually met Tim Sylvia down in Worcester when he fought Pujanowski. It's like one of my most viewed YouTube videos on my profile.
Right on. Yeah, how would I didn't actually get a chance to go to that show, but I heard it was great. I heard it was quite a spectacle. Pretty cool that they chose Worcester for that too, to do that belt.
Yeah, it just it was the perfect venue, the DCU Center, I think it's called. And you know, it's just Butterbean is so professional. He's been in the boxing business for long enough, and he's crossed over to MMA, and he organized the whole thing, and he really made it look like an old Pride show. And just everything kicked off. And a lot of really, you know, consummate pros there. Guys who actually later ended up in the UFC and were in the UFC before, like David Loizzo, I think, was there in one of the fights. What was the other guy? UFC guy, yeah. It was just all kinds of talent there.
Well, I know my buddy Frederick Bellator, he's an elite XT veteran. He fights out of, he usually represents South Shore Sport Fighting when he fights. He was on that card. He didn't end up so well that night, but he's a buddy of mine, and he said good things about the way the show was run and everything, and it's exciting. Just, I mean, that's really, you know, that's the dream for me. I would love to see Maine as a stage, one of these states where, you know, MMA is just really a part of its culture. The biggest shows in the world are coming here. I mean, I know it's a bit of some people think I'm crazy when I talk like that, but I really do think that, you know, that with a little bit of encouragement, we really do have the culture here to really develop a very, very strong fight scene. Again, I can't think of any other New England state that's produced not one, but two world champions, the best in their weight class at the time. And again, those are guys that got their start right here in Maine. So that's kind of my dream.
Right.
Let me ask you a question, though, with regards to Maine. I love Maine. I used to go up there every year on vacation up to Bar Harbor. I haven't been there in about 7 or 8 years, but I used to love it every year since I was a little kid.
You got to say it like this, Bar Harbor.
Bar Harbor, I know. I used to joke around with the one family we used to rent a cabin from. And the last time we were there was 2004, right before the Sox finally broke their drought and won the World Series. That little kid that was up there, I'd see him every year. And every year, like, this is going to be our year. It's going to be our year. And the Sox, they're going to win. And every year, they ain't going to win nothing. I'd get them all fired up. It was great. You know, heckling children is one of my life's joys. But talking about getting crowds up there and everything, I know from a boxing standpoint, back in the late 80s and mainly in the early 90s, pro fighter up in that area, Joey Gamache, who was a professional boxer, lightweight world champion, he was able just basically himself to really be able to build a following up there, which first of all proves that, you know, the people are going to react if they can get something they like. And second of all, I think just by watching him, this is when I really started getting into boxing and really started following it and understanding the sport. But it was almost like watching one of their own. It was like, I think just the support he got was bigger than Ali Liston, which was the heavyweight championship of the world back in the 60s, because it was a local kid making good. And, I mean, if they can carry that over to MMA, I mean, that would be kind of awesome.
Absolutely. It's interesting you mentioned Joey, too, because I had the chance to meet him for the first time last year. We had this quirky little thing. I mean, as you pointed out, you know, we used to have a really, really rich boxing history and producing a world champion, Joey Gamache, out of Wilson. And then, you know, I don't want to say interest, but certainly the number of events that were being promoted definitely waned for a few years there. And what Maine did as a cost-saving measure, the legislature eliminated the State Athletic Commission in 2007. And unbeknownst to anyone at the time who was voting on that particular budget that eliminated the commission, one of the unintended consequences of that act question was that they made professional boxing in Maine illegal. Nobody knew it at the time. Nobody really read the fine print on it, but by abolishing the oversight authority in the Athletic Commission, that meant that you could not hold a professional boxing belt. And nobody really even realized this up until, I guess it was 2010, when Joe Gamache Sr., Joey's dad, went to hold a boxing show and got a call from the district attorney saying, hey, you can't do this. And kind of opened a big can of worms. Everybody started looking at it and found out, oh, gosh, we did this unintentionally back in 2007. So I was reelected in 2010 to the legislature, and one of the first bills I submitted that session was an act to regulate boxing and prize fighting in Maine. And I had the opportunity to work closely with Joe Gamache Sr. to do that. And Joey Jr. Combat sports history here in the state of Maine, because we are a tourism state, and these are tourism sports that can really economic engine for all communities. And I just want to be a part.
Folks, we had a little technical difficulty. This happens from time to time.
Yo.
Back again, sorry.
Okay.
Phone's on the fritz. Back. What happens when you ask a question to me?
What?
Making a joke.
Chris, I'm going to buy you a new computer. Worst technology in my company.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, you reached the phone of Matt Peterson. Please leave me a message and I'll call you back as soon as I can. Thanks for calling.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Me, Matt, sorry we got disconnected there. This is Rich again. We're attached back into the show, and we'll try you back in a couple minutes here. So, there goes Matt for now. Anyway, while we have a little moment here, I did want to mention that UFC 143 is this Saturday night. While you're waiting for the Super Bowl, you can go watch UFC 143 Saturday night. Main event is Carlos the Natural Born Killer Condit versus Nick Diaz. And Carlos is pretty nasty with the hands. He knocked out a lot of guys. He's real tough, and I don't know what Nick Diaz is going to be able to do with him, but this is the fight nobody expected to happen before Nick Diaz was supposed to fight George St. Pierre. But now that George St. Pierre is out with an injury, they're giving this fight the label of an interim title fight. So Diaz and Condit will actually be fighting for an interim welterweight title. And then George St. Pierre will fight the winner of that. And we'll see what happens then. But co-main event is heavyweights Fabricio Werdum and Roy Nelson. Big country. Big court. And it should be an interesting fight. Another heavyweight, actually a lighter weight guy, Mike Pierce is fighting Josh Koscheck. And Pierce is actually a former guest on our show a while ago. Also, Scott Jorgensen versus Rainin Pigado, who I never heard of. Ed Herman versus Clifford Starks. Dustin Poirier versus Max Holloway. Matt Riddle versus Henry Martinez. and Alex Bruce Lee Caceres versus Bruce Leroy, I should say, versus Edwin Figueroa, Chris Cope versus Matt Brown, Rafael Natal versus Michael Kuiper, and finally Daniel Stitchin versus Stephen Thompson. It should be a really good show. Looking forward to it. I want to see if Roy Nelson can take on a guy like Fabricio Verdum, who was famous for taking Emelianenko to deep water for the first time in a long time and handed him his first loss there in Strikeforce. I believe it was a guillotine choke that did it. Leroy fight, though. But anyway, we're going to give Matt another shot here. See what happens. Yeah, my computer is slow tonight. Having a bad day here. So if anybody out there knows databases, give me a call. Email me at info@unlimitedfightnews.com. Help me out. Do something. The website's been offline now for about 3 hours. Can't figure out what the heck's going on. And, you know, of course, I paid for the hook. So that's not the issue.
Hello?
Matt.
Hey, is this Rich?
Yep, we're back. Sorry about
that. Hey, buddy, yeah. No problem. Technical difficulties, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I think you were talking about the little obscure rule that made boxing matches illegal, and Joey Gamache's father or something was trying to do a show. That's where we left.
Exactly, yeah. And ended up getting a call from the district attorney, stating that he couldn't do it, and that's kind of what revealed this this snafu in the law. And fortunately, I was reelected in 2010 and was in a position to submit legislation to rectify that error. And really worked for holding on that.
And how did you get involved in actually getting the MMA set up up there?
Can't you hear that?
We can't hear it. Sometimes I'll call back, it goes away. You want me to try to call back again real quick?
I'm doing with you guys again.
All right, hang on. I know it comes through on the show sometime. You do the recordings if somebody complains about it. It's recorded like that, too, so we don't like to have that.
Hopefully this will be a little better. Yeah, that sounds much better.
Cool. Yeah, I don't want that to translate to the recording, so go ahead.
Right on. So, like I was saying, here in Maine, we have a citizens' legislature, part-time, non-professional legislature, meaning that we all are overworked and underpaid, essentially. Most of the people that serve in the legislature, that they have other jobs, other responsibilities in their life outside of just serving in public office. And the cool thing about that is when you have a citizens' legislature like Maine's, you have people that come from all different kinds of backgrounds, and they're able to bring with it a certain level of expertise about certain areas. And that was a big priority for me, being a fan of the sport of MMA when I was elected, was to submit a bill to make sure that the sport was legal here in my home state, and that it would be regulated and safe for fighters and fans alike. And that was it, and just I sponsored a piece of legislation, lobbied my colleagues in both the House and the Senate. And we came out with almost, it was like a 12-1 divided report out of committee. and then went to the floors for a vote and was unanimous in the Senate, and a few people were put in the House, but ultimately the governor even came around. He was not a fan initially, he stated publicly, but ultimately came around and signed the bill. And, you know, it was a proud day that Mike Brown came up. He flew in for it. We had representatives from the UFC that came and made a promise at some point to bring their business to Maine, so it was definitely a proud day.
Now, obviously, the whole situation with New York is about their band there. Hello? Back again, folks. Another problem. Hopefully we can finish the show without any more issues.
Tornado.
Back again. Hey, we're back. Sorry.
All right, right on.
So I was asking, what do you think about the whole situation over there in New York, where they're resisting the bill to legalize the sport?
Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. I mean, obviously, I'm a an incredible fan of the sport. I want to see it legalized, not just only legalized, but regulated effectively everywhere. And clearly New York is a massive market. You know, it's only about 7.5 hours or so from where I live. I traveled there, to New York's facility is for various things, and I would love to see an event there. Obviously, with anything, there's a lot of inside baseball, and politics is a part of the landscape by design, of course. And I've read all the things about the Culinary Union and so forth, and some of the pieces that might be involved with that. That's obviously big city politics. I mean, Maine's a small state with a population of 1.3 million, so kind of an apples to orange comparison. But it's discouraging. I mean, just as a fan, I mean, in this day and age, it's time, and I hope progress is made sooner rather than later on making it happen.
Cool. And what do you love most about promoting MMA and helping advance the sport in your state?
It's a great question. I mean, at any level, I mean, I looked at the passage of the legislation really as just a first step, because to be a true promoter and any fans of this sport are just so passionate, and people understand this, that it's about trying to educate folks on what goes into this, on the background. I mean, these athletes are clearly just world class. I mean, the courage, let alone the physical conditioning and everything that it takes to actually climb into the cage. I think it can do a lot for us as a community, as a culture, to be pushing it out there as far as possible, so that as many people are aware of it and understand the nuances of the sport. That's really what I want to see. I mean, here in Maine, we're legal now, and it's regulated, and the Combat Sports Authority of Maine is up and coming and doing some good work to create a safer environment every time for fighters to compete in. But that's really just still the first step. I mean, until we have consistent events, until we get large-scale events like a Bellator, like a UFC, like a Strikeforce coming to the state, there's still a lot of work to be done. So I think just having a conversation, trying to educate folks. I know a lot of my legislative colleagues were really reluctant at first to support this bill, but after a conversation, after discussing just about how highly conditioned and intense athletes that these individuals are that compete in a sport, people come around.
Cool. And what do you think it's going to take to get one of those big shows up there?
Well, I think we need to hold, consistent events to begin with. We need promotions that are holding events regularly. Fighters need the opportunity to compete on a regular basis, and that in turn is going to create more schools popping up and get that again. That it's going to pull the more fans we're pulling in from our neighbors in New Hampshire, Massachusetts. I think that's really what it's going to take to draw the attention of a SUFA to get a Strikeforce or a UFC event here. I've on my Twitter account, I'm constantly, trying to reach out to Mark Pavlich of the MFC, the Maximum Fighting Championship, on neighbors to the north in Canada, and get him to bring a show down here. I do believe the market's here. The shows that have been held have been very successful. I want to invite everybody to come to the state. We don't have a large pool of fighters to pull from at this point, but they are here, and I want to work with my peers and bring as many events as possible to the state. And I think that in turn will draw the eye of the UFC. And there's no reason why we couldn't have a fight night level event here, like they used to do the shows on Spike. With UFC on Fuel, something like that. I think we're right for that opportunity. And I do believe it'll happen within the next 12 to 36 months.
Well, you got Mike Brown's here, so does he have anybody in the organization?
He always said it's his dream to fight back in Portland after he defended his belt against Uriah Faber in Sacramento, California. He was asked that from the audience during the press post-fight press conference, and he said, "My goal is to fight in Portland, Maine. I would love to have that opportunity." So he's still signed to the UFC roster, and he's getting up there in years, and he recognizes that he doesn't have a lot of fights left in him. So as a friend and as a fan of Mike Brown, that would be a dream come true for me to create the opportunity for him to fight here back in his home state of Maine. So Dana, if anybody's out there listening, we would do anything to bring the UFC here. We would welcome them with open arms, and I think they'd be very pleased with the reception they'd receive from the Maine community.
Yeah, I would lead you to his phone number, Dana's, but I guess they published it wrong when they published all his personal information.
I'm still trying to find out. He has a home. He owns a home up here in Levant, Maine, which is near Bangor, where I work. So. He's already got the ties to the state. I don't know if he just wants to come here to get away and leave work behind or what, but I'm hoping someday for the guy who never sleeps and is always working that crossover will occur naturally and we'll have him holding a show here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they have enough shows. They ought to consider it for sure. He definitely does have some ties up there, and he's been back and forth between Boston, Maine, and Vegas almost his whole life. So he should be familiar with that territory and want to bring something out there. So we'll see.
That's it. I mean, he's knocked off Boston. He's knocked off Vegas. Now it's the only one left is Maine. So hopefully we're next on the list.
Yep. But other than that, as far as Mike goes, What's it been like to be his friend over the years, and can you tell us anything about him that we don't know?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that people don't know about Mike. I think he already has this reputation as being a real, super accessible, down-to-earth, blue-collar fighter, completely self-made, but it really goes much deeper than that. And when you spend time with him, you just understand how truly, truly humble he is. that's the part that I'm not sure people really understand. I mean, he has had some significant challenges in his life, and he doesn't really like to talk about a lot of them, and I respect that. But what he has forged from his own hands, I mean, he's gone through a lot to get where he's at. And he never lost sight of his goal, and he'll tell you himself it's always been small, measurable goals that he set up for himself. I remember sitting with him in a pizza joint in Scarborough, Maine, interviewing him 10 years ago, and he was telling me how his number one goal was to fight in Japan. Like, that's where he wanted to get. He wanted to have a fight in Japan. Well, he knocked that off. And then he said his next goal was, you know, I want to be top 10. I want to be top 10 in the world. Then he knocked that off. Then it was top 3. Then I want to be a world champion. He knocked off all of his goals. And that's what I respect most about him. I mean, he's been an inspiration not only as a fighter, but as a friend, too. He doesn't forget where he came from. And he's good to the people that have been with him along the way. And, you know, he's a great guy. I mean, he deserves all the success in the world. It's not too many people that reach that status of being number one in the world in their weight class. And he did it. So, and he did it with a lot of class, as far as I'm concerned. So I'll always, whenever anyone asks me who my favorite fighter is, it will always be Mike Brown.
Cool. And I got a little bit of a tie to him, too, because I went to the same school over at Norwich University before I graduated.
Absolutely.
Not sure if I was on the wrestling team at the same time, but what year did he go to school there, do you know?
Oh, gosh, yeah. It was probably like he probably graduated in around 93 from high school, so he must have been there like around 94, 96, 97, somewhere in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I was on the
early to mid-90s.
I was on the team in 96, and that was my sophomore year, basically. I was coming from the United States Air Force Academy my freshman year. They threw me out, so I went to Norwich. They had already accepted me. But they threw me out because I couldn't pass calculus. It wasn't anything like I was in trouble. So.
Anyway, you got different tough wrestlers out of that school. That's all I know.
Yeah, well, one thing I remember about it, I was only on the team for a couple months because I fell off a roof and I broke a bunch of bones. It's another story, but anyway, the training that I went through in just a few months was just phenomenal. I mean, there was this one place, I'm sure that if he was there around the same time, he'll remember the big set of stairs behind the elementary school that we used to do. And we used to run the ski hill every Friday. And I later took that opportunity to actually took that mold and put it on my boxing team that I started when I healed up from the fall. And I started the boxing team instead of going back to wrestling. But there was this set of stairs behind the elementary school, and we used to have to do all these things like fireman's carries, wheelbarrows, like anything you could think of, up and down those damn stairs. And that was a pain in the ass. It got you in shape, for sure.
Unreal.
And we had a great coach.
Yeah, no, that's where Mike really blossomed, you know, but as he tells the story, his wrestling coach in high school was a huge mentor of his, Coach Reese, Ted Reese. God love the guy. He's in his 70s now, and he's got two fake hips at this point. He still trains kids on a constant basis, tough kids, too, and does most of the workouts with them. So he's an inspirational guy in his own right, and I know that he's had a lot of impact on Mike over the years, but I guess, you know, the way he'll tell the story, it's really was at Norwich that he blossomed, that he came into his own, that, you know, his wrestling really came together, and where he really came together as a student athlete and in turn as a person as well.
Yeah, I know if he doesn't remember me from the team, he'll probably remember the other Bergeron. There was actually another kid on the team named Bergeron. It's a rare name, but there's a kid named Matt Bergeron, I think. He'll remember, but when we talk to him next week, I'll have to ask him about that.
Absolutely.
Now, do you know if he was in the Corps of Cadets or the civilian side of the school?
I don't know that. That's a good question. I would assume the civilian side, because I've never heard him mention the Corps of Cadets, but I don't know. I don't really need it. That's another one you'll have to ask him.
Now, as far as other fighters out there that you watch a lot of, is there anybody out there that you can't miss a fight?
Yeah, well, my brother, he's a big one. He's again, he kind of came up under Mike, and he's, you know, only fought locally in the regional scene, but he's certainly one of my favorites. And John Jones, I was at his first fight when he made his debut. He actually fought a guy that my brother fought, and that's why I was paying attention to the fight, because I wanted to see the guy that my brother had fought, how he was going to fare. And he was fighting John Jones, and immediately I was just completely captivated. I knew there was something special about him from that second. And I knew his coach at the time, who he started out with, Team Bomb Squad, up in Portland, New York, under Ryan Ciottoli, and I grabbed Ryan, and I said, who is that kid? And he said, yeah, he's something special, and he's a junior college national champ, and works out really hard, and so to be there for his first fight, knowing the guys that he trained with, and, you know, following the progression of his career, and just seeing them, just simply magical stuff he does as a fighter. I mean, it's the way he moves, and the finesse, and just the sheer athleticism that he puts on in the ring. You know, it's always a pleasure to watch him. But, you know, really all these guys, it's an easier question to ask who I don't like, because most of these guys, you know, there's a reason I tune into the fights every week, because there's so many tough guys up and coming. I mean, Josh Crispy is another guy, featherweight fighter, and a special sport fighting.
To watch him all the time in Untamed in Massachusetts.
Yeah, exactly. You know, seeing him come up, and I remember when he fought Spencer Page, and Spencer Page, again, another Bomb Squad kid. Everybody from Bomb Squad's tough. There was a lot of anticipation for that fight, and everybody, you know, there was a title fight in full force and at the Plymouth Memorial Hall, Plymouth Mass, and people were so stoked and really anticipating that bout, and then just Josh ended him with like an 11-second head kick. I mean, it was just over, out, you know, and, you know, those are special moments. Just, it's nice watching him compete on the biggest stage in the world now, but, you know, remembering what he was like coming up and just how indomitable he was, it was something special, and he still is.
Yeah, it was interesting. I actually saw John Jones at Foxwoods back in one of his knockouts. He was fighting on a USFL card down there. And that was really when I was first starting out. And it was one of my first big press credentials to go down there and do this show. You know, I don't offhand remember his fight, but of course when I watched it on replay on YouTube, I said, oh yeah, that was that guy. Because it was so fast. He just knocked the guy out, I think, with a spinning back fist, and that was it. And just a dynamic fighter even back then. But what really impressed me about that show was looking around and seeing all these guys that, you know, they are regulars, like especially in the Plymouth shows, too. You know, guys like Joe Lazon and Kenny Florian would always show up. But down there, it was actually kind of funny. I saw this one kid, and I said, that looks like Gabriel Gonzaga over there. And the kid says to me, that is Gabriel Gonzaga. I don't know it is. So I go over there, and I say to Gabriel Gonzaga, you know, that kid over there thinks you're Gabriel Gonzaga. And he goes, I am. So I interviewed him after the show, and kind of had a good laugh about it. But he looks just like a regular guy. You'd never guess it was him sometimes when he's in a crowd.
Well, that's a cool thing. I mean, the first UFC I ever went to live was UFC 40, which was up to that point the largest event the UFC had ever had. It was Ken Shamrock versus Tito the first time. And I met Randy Couture for the first time at that event. I was ringside to that show, and I just was blown away. I mean, I'll always be a Randy fan for life after that experience, because he was, again, this was a guy that I just watched, you know, a number of times from the comfort of my living room, you know, halfway across the country from where I was fighting at the time. And then finally I was sitting next to him, and he was just a very, very, you know, he was the real deal. It's truly how I felt about him. He was a very humble guy, you know, like, and those are the guys that really resonate with me, the ones that don't put on all the ego, but just, you know, at peace with what they're capable of doing athletically. And don't have to really shine it on, because it's just evident in what they do. And, you know, that made a huge impression on me as well. And that is the cool thing about all these athletes, is most of them are really accessible. And you're not going to get that in the NFL or the NBA or anything like that, but in MMA, you can walk it up most of the time to one of the best guys in the world and maybe even have a conversation with them. That's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, I actually got to meet Randy and his son, Ryan, up there in Vegas when I was there for a few months. And Randy, I just kind of met by accident. There was a grappling tournament there, and a friend of mine was in town from a site called Takedown Radio. And so he was covering it from Iowa, all the way out from Iowa, you come to Vegas. So I went down there to check it out. Never even been to a grappling tournament before, and that's the last place I expect Randy to show up. But Randy shows up, and he's there hanging out like a regular guy and getting pictures taken with everybody. And he's a real soft-spoken, quiet guy and doesn't really, attract too much of a spotlight around him. But people just flock to him because they like to, shake his hand and say hi to him. He doesn't turn anybody away, that's for sure.
No, he doesn't. He does. He takes the time, and that was cool too. That, for the first UFC in Boston, the headliner was. That was the rematch, I think, between Frank Yeager and BJ Penn. But the co-main event that night there was James Toney versus Randy. So that was cool too, to just kind of have that full circle experience to be watching him fight in New England, where a decade ago or more, whatever it was now. I was talking to him in Vegas, so that was kind of a cool experience as well.
Awesome. Now, tell us a little bit about this big show coming up. What is this, February 11th, you said?
Definitely. February 11th. Liston main at the Colisée, and the location is actually where the Ali Liston fight took place. So there's a lot of history in that building. It's a beautiful facility. They just did a $4 million renovation. So we're super excited about the venue, and we've just got what I consider a really well card that would stack up, not just in name, but in New England in general. I mean, we've got 21 fights on the card. We've got a number of amateur belts. But in the main event, we've got Dan Keefe, who was a top-ranked middleweight in New England for a number of years. He's actually dropped down to welterweight now, despite that 170, against real up-and-comer here in Maine, in Ryan Sanders, who's one of those guys I was talking about earlier. He's at Young's MMA, and he's just been on a tear. I think he was like 4-1 as an amateur. Now he's 2-1 as a pro, and he's doing some really interesting things, so that should be a great fight. And then we've got Paul Gorman, like I said, a Brazilian jiu-jitsu brown belt under Jay Jack, who's fighting Anthony Leone, who's a WEC Bellator veteran out of that team I was talking about, the team that John Jones got to start with, Team Bomb Squad. So that's going to be a really exceptional belt as well. And then we get a number of other guys on the card. That we've got three former mainstay champion wrestlers on the card, which is a really cool thing that I'm proud of. And it should be a fantastic night. Tickets are super cheap. I mean, $25. I can't remember ever going to an MMA show, a regional show, where tickets were that cheap. So that's really a cool thing that creates the opportunity for anybody to come. Liston's a fight town. It's a town that Joey Dimash comes from. We're going to have Mike Brown in the building that night. He's flying up. So we're just really optimistic that online sales so far have been really pleasantly surprised by the outpouring of support. And just encourage anyone who's interested in MMA, whether a hardcore fan or just wants to check it out for the first time, really hope that they'll make it out on the 11th.
All right. Cool. Yeah, I actually have a little bit of a connection up there to Lewiston. When I was in high school, I was on the Air Force Junior ROTC drill team, and we'd have to actually go up to Lewiston once or twice a year for competitions because they had a team up there. Big gym. So I've been there a couple times. I don't quite remember, doing much there except for hanging out at the building, but seemed like a nice place.
It's a great town. It's a great area. It's central Maine, so it's centrally located. Folks were coming down from Bangor. It's right there off the interstate, and people coming up from the southern part of the state, it's accessible to them as well. So we're excited about the location, more than anything, we're really excited about the guys that are on this card. I mean, I think we've got a card that holds up anywhere. I think, we got a guy like Ernie Ornelius making his pro debut at 125 pounds. He was 2-0 as an amateur. This is going to be his pro debut. Guy's got a 55-25 amateur boxing record. He's got awesome stand-up, but he's also got the wrestling background. So we're excited to be putting guys like this over to give them the forum
to really show their stuff. He's going to be fighting a guy from Bomb Squad. He's coming down from New York. Evan Velez is 3-1. So it's just some really interesting stuff.
Cool. And is there anybody you want to thank or give a shout out to? Anything? Any final words or anything?
You know, I just really, more than anything, want to thank the community for the outpouring of support. It's been great. The reception's been great. We've been getting some good press. And I really want to thank the fighters because, I mean, they're the guys that are driving this thing. We've got some awesome amateurs that are going to be making their debut. Just encourage everybody to get over to newenglandfights.com to check out the card. You can learn a bit more about the fighters there, and if anybody's interested in tickets, they can just check out thecolisee.com, thecolisee.com, and buy tickets there, $25 for general admission. Everybody's guaranteed a seat. It's all reserved seating, so hope people will come check it out on February 11th, and I want to thank both you guys so much for taking the time, and thanks for the support.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us and dealing with the technical difficulties.
All good.
Yeah,
I did a podcast myself for a number of years, so I know how it goes. Not a thing.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because I'm up on a hill in New Hampshire here, and you can see a whole lake from my house. So you'd think the reception would be good for the wireless internet, but for some reason the internet goes off and on sometimes and flickers. It usually happens during a snowstorm. Tonight's clear weather, and it's still happening, so.
What can you do? What can you do? We made it work, and like I said, really appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to come on and talk about the show, and, thank you for the support. I know Mike's going to enjoy talking with you both next week as well, so I hope you guys enjoy that. I'll just be continuing to tune in, so thanks again.
Awesome. Well, thanks for stopping by, and we definitely will keep an eye out on your promotion there. Keep sending us all the press releases. We'll post them on the blog as soon as we get that fixed. We got an issue with that tonight. I got to figure out something going on with the database. I don't know if you know any computer guys, but yeah.
Shoot me an email. I might have a name for you.
All right, cool. Well, until next time we talk, have a good night, and good luck with the show and everything else up there in Maine.
Thank you guys again. I appreciate it. And like I said, just check out newenglandfights.com to learn all you can about the show and thecolisee.com for tickets. And thanks again, guys. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Have a good one.
Take care, guys.
You too. All right. So we got about 20 minutes left here. Haven't really checked out what's coming up for boxing, but I know a lot of the old familiar faces that I saw fight at the Cosmopolitan out there in Vegas are fighting. I think it's on Friday Night Fights this week at one of the Fertitta's other businesses, the Texas Station Gambling Hall out there, one of their casinos, and it's called Super Brawls. Over there. It's a pretty big card. I've been getting PR on it all week. But I think Edison Miranda's fighting. Guy named Rances Bartholomew, who I saw a bunch of times. I think he was on just about every Cosmopolitan card they had. They had the two inside and then the one outdoors that I went to. And he was there for every one of them, one every time. But seems like a good card for Friday Night Fights. I'm sure they'll have to give the 10-count bell for Goody and Angelo Dundee.
Yeah.
Let me just see if I can locate a story on that one. Here I go. But did you get any chances to watch any boxing recently, or get anything going on?
Last weekend, any of the fights that were on were just on 2 a.m. late. I know my dad was watching one fight on the Spanish channel. And even though, you know, we can't understand them, you know, I love the Spanish announcers. I mean, they'd make chess exciting. But the one fighter was our favorite was the Spanish guy. I think he was Mexican. And I fell asleep there in the fourth round, and found out in the sixth round he got blasted and knocked out. Trying to remember what was on Friday night. If I remember the main event, I was kind of dozing off. It was on a little bit late. But I remember it being a mismatch. And I know even Teddy Atlas was like, it's going to be a mismatch. I don't have the results in front of me. I'm not remembering the names.
Okay, folks, back again. And we're hooking up Tony back on the line here. As I was mentioning, we have that fight and back again. I was mentioning we have that fight at Texas Station Casino. The main event there is light heavyweights Edison Miranda. As I said, he's 35-6, 30 knockouts. He's fighting Isaac Chalemba, who's 18-1-1 with 9 knockouts. And Rances Barthelemy, the guy I just mentioned, he's real tall and skinny. He's a lightweight. He's fighting an 8-rounder versus a fellow undefeated fighter. The fights that I saw him in, he never really was tested. So this is going to be a real big step up for him. He's 14-0 with 11 knockouts, and he's fighting Hyland Williams Jr., 15-0 with 3 knockouts, who I also saw in action. I think he was in the one that was outside on the pool deck there. He was in one of those fights, and he looked pretty good. Also on that card, another couple undefeated guys at heavyweight, 8-rounder between Magomed Adsulamov, who's 12-0, all 12 wins by knockout, fighting Pedro Rodriguez, who's 8-0 with 6 of his wins by knockout. Also, it's kind of an interesting smaller fight here. I guess this could be considered the Jesus fight of the week since there's a Jesus involved. Jesus Gutierrez, he's 1-0, 1 knockout, fighting a guy named Cameron Creel at light welterweight, who's 0-0-2. I don't know if that's ever happened to anybody. Their first two fights in the sport of boxing are draws. That's tough to do. But that's what this guy's record is, 0-0-2. Can't get a break. Another fight worth mentioning here over on Saturday in Germany. There's a cruiserweight title fight for the IBF cruiserweight title. And our former guest, Steve Cunningham, will be fighting Pablo Hernandez. And Hernandez is 25-1, 13 KOs. Cunningham is 24-3 with 12 KOs.
In their first fight, I didn't see it. You know, I'm following all the reports I read. Of following it live online as it happened. Cunningham got knocked down in the first round, and they said he was stunned pretty good. But he got up, and he dominated like the next 4 or 5 rounds. I mean, just completely dominated. And then Hernandez had a cut, and they said it was not really that bad. They stopped the fight and went to the cards, and Hernandez was like, way ahead on all the cards. They said it was ridiculous. The only round he really won was the round that he scored the knockdown in.
And I wonder where he's from. Hernandez sounds like a Mexican or Latino name. So hopefully he doesn't.
You know, I don't know.
That is so,
you know, I don't know where he's from.
I guess that's why they're fighting in Germany. Maybe it's neutral ground. But also on the card, we have a couple of interesting fights with the heavier guys. We got Enad Lysina, cruiserweight. He's 21-3 with 11 knockouts, fighting Alexander Alexiev, who's 22-2 with 20 knockouts. And then light heavyweight Edward Gutnecht, who's 22-1 with 9 knockouts, fighting Vyacheslav Uzelkov, who is 25-1 with 16 knockouts. And it's all around a pretty good card there in Germany. It's on Saturday night. So what else we got? There's a Jesus Fighter of the Week. Not very competitive here, but bantamweight's Jesus Ruiz, who's 27-4 with 3 draws, 20 knockouts, fighting for the vacant NABF bantamweight title against Cecilio Santos, who's 27-21 with 4 draws, 17 knockouts. That's down in Mexico, also on Saturday. And another ordeal. That's the other news we forgot to mention. The Andre Berto Victor Ortiz fight is off.
Yeah, I actually was saying that when we had one of our technical difficulties.
Oh. Yeah, I couldn't believe that. It's kind of a weird situation there.
Yeah, Berto tore his bicep or injured his bicep, and that's shit. I mean, that fight looked good, and I think Berto was going to get his revenge this time.
Yeah, and of course that gave way to people saying, oh, now that Ortiz isn't fighting Berto, maybe he can fight Mayweather on June 9th.
And, of course,
you know,
Pacquiao. Oh, well, Pacquiao, right. I mean, you know, a fight Mayweather again would be kind of pointless. You know, fight Pacquiao, why not?
Yes, we'll see. But we go down to another fight in Mexico. Light welterweight's Roberto Ortiz is 22-0-1 with 19 knockouts, fighting Cesar Chavez, who is 18-1 with 8 knockouts for the WBC silver light welterweight title. And there's another Jesus on that card. He's not in a very good fight, so we won't mention. See what else. We've got to go to the next page. Kind of an interesting fight over in Reebok Stadium in Bolton, Lancashire, United Kingdom on Saturday. A super bantamweight fight between Scott Quigg, who's 23-0 with 16 knockouts, and Jamie Arthur, who's 4 knockouts.
Uh-oh.
And we have our 90-second warning. So go Pats, and thanks everybody for stopping by. Of course, shout out to our sponsors, DrinkCocaine.com, energy drink, of course, and also ZionsShop.com, ScienceApparel.com, all that happy stuff there. Go check them out. And until next week, when we will have Mike Brown on and another special guest, we will see you later. And definitely been a good show. Sorry for the technical difficulties for anybody out there listening live. And we'll make it up to you next week. It'll be smooth flying, I promise.
All right. Until next week,
Miles. Adios.